My guest is the West Australian author, long resident in the USA, John Burbidge. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Peter.
How long have you lived in the USA?
This is my 27th year, I think.
And you
I've actually lived in the US longer than I lived in Australia.
You lived in India for quite some time, and will return to that decade of your life, about which you have written in a recent memoir, extraordinary book called The Boatman. But you came to my attention first as the biographer of the Australian author, the almost forgotten Australian author, Gerald Glascon, who published generally as G.M. Glascon, some 20 novels.
That's correct. Yes, Glascon isn't known by many Australians. Most of his 20 books were published in the UK and translated into multiple European languages. Back home in Australia, he got a mixed reception. Many of the critics didn't think terribly much of his writing from a literary point of view. But he did win quite a bit of favor with readers as a basically good storyteller.
Yes, which he is. He came to my attention because he wrote the novel No End to the Way, which Robert Desai, who is a great admirer of yours and supporter of yours, and I think if Australian letters had a saint, it would be Robert Desai. You might agree, John.
Oh, indeed.
A marvellous man.
Very high up there on my list.
Oh, wonderful man, and yeah. a beautiful spirit is Desai. He describes it as the first Australian gay novel, No End to the Way. It was published under the pseudonym of Neville Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And you relate in the book that it couldn't be sold in Perth due to the censorship of the period, but it couldn't be shipped in. But they worked out that there was a loophole in the law and it could be sort of dropped in from aeroplanes.
Well, that story's got around. I was never able to get to the bottom of it and really see if that was the case or not. But the book was banned for a period of just over 12 months, and then the ban was lifted.
Mm.
And then Corgi paperback in the UK printed, initially 10,000 and then 20,000 and 30,000.
Mm.
And these were shipped into Australia. And people finally were able to get their hands on this little thing.
I think it's one of the first tellings. In its 60s, isn't it? Early 60s?
65 it was published.
One of the first tellings of it was described as a gay marriage. And that's very much very topical, both in the country in which you live, USA, and here, of course. And it was the first telling of a long-term gay relationship.
Indeed.
Anywhere in the world, I think. So he was ahead of his time.
Oh, he was. And and it was a very frank telling as well.
Yes.
That word crops up in many reviews.
Yes, and it was often the first port of call for gay men or men unsure of their sexuality to read that novel. It was their first kind of awakening in a way.
He had a tremendous sort of fan club, if you like, from people who read that book from all around the world. I read some of the letters when I was doing the research for the book, and they were extremely moving. I mean, you had men from Poland and parts of England and Nebraska and all over the planet, who just, for many of them, it was the first time that they felt validated in any sense. They had never come across anything like this. And as you say, with 65, he was way, way ahead of the curve, really.
My guest is John Burbidge, author of Dare Me, The Life and Work of Gerald Glascon, the West Australian novelist, now unfortunately forgotten, although you've given him back to us. And thanks to the internet, his whole canon is readily available. And I've read not only No End to the Way, but A Minor Portrait, which I enjoyed, actually.
Mm-hmm. I think that is one of his finer novels.
I think so, yes.
That was his second book. The first one was more like a compilation of short stories that he managed to weave into a novel. So he was still finding his way through the craft of being a novelist. But Minor Portrait, yes, it does get quite a bit of praise, and I think rightly so. Again, it happens to be set in Perth. It's a story of a young man and an older woman. Very Glaskin, in that it was he was choosing to talk about a rather taboo subject. You know, we don't, back in the 60s, this was not quite the thing to write about, but he did. And Glaskin was like that. He tended to pick up on subjects and themes that were sort of off limits, and he would just go for the jugular.
He was fearless, I think.
Oh, he was, both as a person and as a writer. I mean, there are numerous instances where he was quite... He could be quite... belligerent,
yes,
is probably a good word.
Described as an attacking spirit.
And, very much so.
And I don't think he'd ever rest in peace, poor old Gerald Glaskin. I don't know when I've read of a more difficult or unlikable man, frankly.
Yes, that's true. There are many aspects of his personality that you know, don't draw you to him. But there was also another side that I came across as I explored the man through different channels, through friends, acquaintances, and family members, and so on, and that he could be extremely caring.
Yes.
He would go out of his way. Dame Mary Durack, a great friend of his, when one of her daughters died, he was the first one on the doorstep. And he just sort of took over, took charge, did whatever had to be done to help Dame Mary through that period. And several people have told me stories like that.
And spoke of his kindness.
Oh, there was a very kind, caring, compassionate side to Gerry Glaskin, but it was juxtaposed with this belligerent, attacking, provocative, you know, never say die.
Yes.
and people who were on the receiving end of that, you know, took years to... recover.
a tilting at windmills, and always he seemed to be fickle, that he'd sort of take up with people and then drop them. A bit like Patrick White, whom he had no time for.
Correct.
But White did that, I think, even worse and even more scurrilously.
Oh, yes. There are stories about the famous White dinner parties where you know, people came home bruised and bloodied. Yes,
Glaskin said, "I wish I could write like Patrick White, but thank God I don't."
Thank God I don't. Yeah. He also referred to him as one of his friends as an old lady with her knitting.
Yes.
Something. He could be very biting, very acerbic. He had a sharp tongue. You know, he could just bring people down to size with just a few words. He could also be very funny, though, and many a person told me stories of how he would just, you know, go and keep an entire dinner party the whole night, just rollicking on the floor.
Well, he was arrested for exposing himself on a beach, allegedly, in Western Australia. And the court, the trial is very, very amusing, and you make great fun of that, as did he, because the police claimed to have identified him as naked at 400 metres, and Glaskin said, "I'm flattered."
That is so Glaskin-esque.
I find, though, I was disturbed. I'm a great admirer of Randolph Stowe, your fellow Western Australian, and he's an author too. I think after White, he's our second greatest novelist, and I don't think he ever had his due. And Glaskin dispenses him as rather dull and immature, which I think is incorrect, although I agree with him on Hal Porter as being much too pretentious.
Yes, well, I think Stowe was a very different kind of writer. Strangely enough, they actually lived in the same street in Perth for one short period of both their lives.
Did they really?
This, but that was just a, you know, one of those things that happened. I don't think they crossed paths very much, but I was interested in doing a story on Stowe.
Yes.
He happened to be known to my former high school English teacher.
Oh.
Came from the same town, Geraldton.
Yes, yes, quite. Merry-go-round in the sea.
Merry-go-round in the sea, yes. And anyway, Barbara Bennett's my teacher, was a great Stowe fan. In fact, she was the one who fed me all his books when I was in high school.
Yes.
And sort of turned me on to Stowe. So I had a wonderful 3 days with Barbara in 2000.
Wow.
And she said to me then, why don't you try writing his biography?
Mm-hmm.
And she promptly took me down to meet one of his aunts in town, and from there I got his address, and I wrote to him in wherever he is in England now,
I think it was.
And he said, well, thank you very much. He actually wrote back longhand and said, thank you, but I've just had another request from another Australian who would like to do my book.
Gabriel Carey.
Well, no, it wasn't Gabriel. Although Gabriel and I met at the Writers Festival in Perth last year, and has written a fine, fine book on on the relationship between the Stowe family and her family.
Yes,
but this was a young man called Roger Averill, and Roger is still chipping away at
good.
It, I believe.
I felt guilty when he died because I'd so admired the merry-go-round in the sea, and many Australians could say that because it was taught at school. And over the years, I'd collected others of his books but not read them, although I had a copy of his book of poems called Act One, which had been very helpful to me on a personal level. Mm-hmm. And when he died, I bought all the missing books, and I read him. I've never done this before, and I may never do it again, but I read his entire output from first to last in order of a publication, and my respect for him is boundless. I think he is a great writer.
Yes. Well, I could only agree, and we can look forward to another book on him, which will be coming out early next year from a writer in Sydney who's been working on it, and we have been in touch over the last couple of years. He may get his due.
Glascon and my guest Robert Burbage were talking about the West Australian writer Gerald Glascon had a chip on his shoulder. He felt that he was more accorded internationally than in his own country, which was certainly the case. And he sort of he never quite cracked it, did he?
Well, he never cracked it in Australia. No, that's true. Although within limited circles, he did. And I think one of the reasons, and I explore in my book several reasons that could have led to that, was that he did have this very provocative, pugnacious nature, which one of his cousins very clearly described to me as Glasconitis. and he lists these attributes, and as soon as I heard that, I said, oh, yes, you know, this is the perfect psychological template that Glasgow fits to the bill. And so whether it was this family tray or whether it was other things, we can make up our own mind on that.